This is Cybert Real 5. We were talking about when you were training as infantry at Almaza, ready for being sent out as drafts. Do you remember much else? You told us about some of the infantry training you were doing, but anything else you remember about your time in the camp?
Yes, in the camp, in retrospect, there was quite a lot going on. There was the canteen there, which was always a laugh. Every night they would have, they called it howdy-howdy, today it's known as bingo. But what was interesting was it was always the same people, same men that were running this howdy-howdy. There must have been a fine rate of going on from it. Usually they were sergeants. But every time I went back into the camp, there were the same people there. The entertainment was provided by fairies or gays, or whatever you might like to call them, and some of it was most amusing, very funny indeed, especially when the chaps' lads used to cheer and clap, and they used to blossom under it. And again, they were the same people, they were kept there. And there were a few that I felt very sorry for because they always seemed to be withdrawn and sad. You know, you felt for them.
In what way?
Well, I think it's very hard to describe, but you could see that they were unhappy. They were completely out of place. In all probability, they were not practicing homosexuals, and as I say, it's very difficult to describe the feeling, but you could see in their faces, in their sort of withdrawal, that they were completely out of place, and perhaps wished that they were not as they were born.
Anything else? Any other sorts of entertainment?
Mm-hmm.
Any other entertainment in there?
Well, occasionally I think there was, I think it was called ENSA, some entertainment that was formed during the war, but it was usually second-rate actors that couldn't earn a living in England. And several times the Poles came and they would perform their national dances and their circus and that, and they were very good indeed. I used to enjoy watching those. Occasionally some French people would come with a little quartet they were little quartets, band, violin, and piano, but they didn't get very good reception as a rule from the lads. Again, I thought it was rather unkind because they were doing their best. But the chaps at that time were interested in what they were supposed to be the equivalent of rock and roll, swing. That went on. As I said, you saw the same old faces, the same old brackets going on. When I was at the cookhouse the previous year, I think it was, the every morning two or three lorries would come in loaded with fresh vegetables. And every morning two or three trucks from Cairo, I forget the name of the contractor, because all these camps had Egyptian contractors that came and carried out various services, but every morning two or three Egyptian trucks would follow them and would just unload these fresh vegetables straight from the army truck onto the contractor's trucks, and straight out of the camp they went. I was told it was to keep the Egyptians happy, but I don't think it kept very many of the British soldiers happy. And another thing I particularly remember there was a marvellous sand carving that I was under the impression that until recently that it's been made by the Poles. Quite recently, I found that the inscription on it was Czech. So,
What was it?
It was a British soldier. It was really marvellous. But there's a photograph of it. Perhaps it might be the only one in existence now, I don't know. But a friend of mine was going to send, there's a lot of Polish friends, and when he showed it to them, they said it was Czech. And he had it and was going to send it to the Czech embassy to see if there was any interest for them. But he might be bringing it down, I don't know yet. But no, that was all. They were usually the same sort of people, as I say, that were running the camp.
Did you get out of the camp much?
Well, mostly you were always, they always kept you on guard or something like that. And you, there was every Saturday night they would detail people for a riot. They had I think it was a 3-ton truck there with rows of benches in it, and they would give you a pickaxe handle, and you would just sit in the truck from about 6 o'clock till about 2 o'clock in the morning waiting for a call to go to trial. Fortunately, the times I was on that stint of duty, there was no trouble in car. I didn't particularly fancy building a pickaxe handle anyway. And I also was there. Oh yes, one of the things that you always infuriated me was sweeping the desert. That's peculiar.
What were you doing?
But they had huge mats, all about 3 inches thick, these coconut fibre choir mats, and they would take about 20 men to drag them on ropes, and you would drag these backwards and forwards, sweeping everywhere with it, between the officers' lines and the main camp.
Just to smooth out the sand?
Smooth it out, yeah. Make it look nice. I recollect that the officers' lines were about a mile or so across the desert, and I remember being put on a charge once there because I dipped my mug into the officers, I forget what they called them now. I can't remember what they were called, but they kept the water cool. They were made from clay, and you could, in the hottest of weather, you would find that the water inside would be quite cold because of the evaporation from the clay. But I was told that I might infect them all with foot and mouth disease, which didn't go down very well with me. But anyway, I think I got 2 or 3 days detention or something for that.
Now, what about when you finished your infantry training? How did you get drafted out, and did you know where you were going?
No, we knew we were going to Italy, and I can't remember what we must have. Yes, we went on one of the oldest cargo ships or troop ships. I can't exactly remember much about the journey there, except there was a lot of graffiti about the clerk for me did written on all the cannons. And we went to Taranto from there, or Taranto, I think the Italians call it. We were there for a few days, and used Western planes that were going on. We got caught up in between a battle going on between the French sailors and the Italians.
What happened?
That was in the main street of Taranto, or Taranto, whichever you want to call it. It was over women, over the girls. And I understood that's what it was about, but I remember we were lying in the gap between them, and they were firing each other with Tommy guns. Went on for about an hour. And I think for the rest of the stay in a camp nearby, Franco was out of bounds. I don't know if there was anything anybody was set up, I don't know. But as I say, we kept close to the ground. And I think we were there for about a week, and then embarked in the trains and moved up towards the infantry depot at Naples, San Martino it was called. Where again there was a long spell of training. Well, I say long spell, might have been a week or so, mostly nights. I remember there were the little girl who was carrying charcoal from the hills. They were just dressed in cotton smock and carrying sacks of charcoal down. It was the charcoal, the sacks were bigger than the girls, larger than the girls. How they carried them, I don't know, but they were only girls of about 11 or 12.
And then what?
Yes, we moved on again, trains, and joined the. We knew we were in the forest. As we left one sergeant behind, by the way, somehow Andrew got himself onto the staff there. But I heard a few months later that he'd taken out a group of. Lads on exercise one night and had fallen into a well. The Italian well, a lot of them had no protection at all. They were just straight into the ground, and he drowned. They couldn't get him out.
So how big was your draft going to the foresters?
On my particular draft, there were 40.
And where were the foresters when you joined them?
They were probably, because I don't remember the names of all the places, but they were probably just in front of the Gothic line. We must have joined them.
So this would be August 1944?
Probably, yes. It would have been... Might have been earlier than that, but I can't recall the exact date or week that I joined them.
And what rank were you joining them as?
Hmm?
What rank were you joining them as?
I was a private. They never recognised my abilities as being worthy of promotion.
And what were your first impressions then of the foresters?
Oh, I quite liked them. I got on very well with the chaps that I was with. The sergeant, Sergeant Herring, I had great respect and admiration for. He took them quite a lot, and we were really well. Of course, with one platoon, only about 28 men or so, but he was soon quite close to each other.
Now, you joined the 2nd 5th Sherwood Foresters. Which company, which platoon were you in?
I was in C Company, 14th platoon. I think it was number 8th section. There were 3 sections to the platoon. Funny enough, very few of the officers that I can remember, they came and went so quickly, and we had so many periods where we had no officer at all. That I just don't remember many of them.
So Sergeant Herring, he'd be your platoon sergeant?
Yes, Sergeant Herring was the platoon sergeant. A chap by the name of Wood was the company sergeant major. And Major Tullock, of course, was the company commander.
What was he like?
Oh, very, very good. He was a good leader. He always led from the front. But come to that, most of them did. But I had great respect for Major Tuttle. Unfortunately, he'd died some time back, so I didn't see him again after 45, I think it was. Mm. You asked what was the first things that were impressions. Marching up to the front and at night and watching the chandelier flares. And one of the things that has always stayed in memory is a dispatch rider, a gunner, had obviously been hit by a shell, I suppose. And he had this heavy DR clothing on, I think, probably a trophy coat. And no head, no arms, no leg, or no feet. But it was the body was just blown up like the Michelin tire. You've seen those, and it was as I passed this chap lying there, and I say it was just as though there was this Michelin tire advert lying there, blown up. It's a sight that has always been, I've always stayed in my mind, but of course there was much worse than that later on, but that particular body.
Were you nervous about going into action as infantry?
No.
As you're moving up?
No, not at that time. No. The chaps had been the foresters that already had been in action in Italy, and I don't know when they had been withdrawn, but they'd been sent to Egypt for a rest. And they were all more or less reinvigorated. But what they thought, I don't know. But most people, you very rarely heard anybody say it in English. So not in my platoon, people just used to plod along in complete silence. And there was no singing, even talking, but rarely as far as I remember. And I think we settled down somewhere for the night, and the following morning the order came for advance to contact, and the whole battalion was in one drawn out in one long line, and we moved forward to contact the Germans. And of course that was in daylight in open country. I can't recall the name of the place where we first engaged them, came in contact. Harry Coates would know, he knows everything. I don't remember.
So this is the first battle of the Gothic line, probably very late August. They can look up what it was. What do you remember of that first battle or first action?
Well, I'm not quite sure now the sequence of those battles which came first. After a time, things start to get blurred. But two or three, I think an early one might have been Monte Vecchio. That was a pretty ghastly affair.
What do you remember of that then? What do you remember of that?
We heard that, we knew we were going that Monte Vecchio was going to be attacked. A Company, I think it was, because at that time the companies took it in turn to be the attacking company to lead. And on this particular occasion, I think it was A Company was the attacking company. attacking company. If you, each company took a turn to attack, and within each company, each platoon took a turn to lead. And strangely enough, within each platoon, each section went first. So you might be the leading platoon, and perhaps the leading man. In front of everybody, and but at Monte Vecchi, A Company were leading, and they attacked the small hill town, and we were in reserve behind, a few miles behind, and we heard that they were running short of ammunition, and that things were pretty bad there, and that they. I went with a group of chaps as well to carry ammo through that night, but unfortunately, I was the last man, and we were very heavily loaded with cases of mortar bombs and bands of bandoliers of ammo. 303 and spring gun magazine, and the chap in front of me was rather heavily built lad, and he lost contact with the chap in front of him, so it finished up that the two of us were on our own, and I think it must have been a German patrol that were perhaps trying to get prisoners, because we were suddenly pounced on, and there was an issue of scrapple, and firing went on, and the fellow I was with almost had his head blown off. But I was then on my own, and not very happy at all. And so I got into the ditch and was just firing around in general. Anyway, it went quite a game, and I had a creep over, and seemed to be everyone's team to have gone, and I looked around and could see the body of the other. I won't mention his name now, but I crawled over to him. It was a very pretty sight. Anyway, funny enough, it's something that I'd forgotten until I spoke to Tom Reynolds a few months back, and I managed to find my way back and to where the our company was grouped, and I was speaking to him, and he said to, a few weeks ago, he said to me, you told me at the time that you went back towards the sound of the 25-pounders. And I remember it now, it was like I could, didn't know where I was, and then I could hear the 25-pounders fire, and I knew that in that, if I went in that direction, I was headed back towards our feet. Anyway, the following morning, we were told that the things were very bad indeed at Monte with A Company, and we moved forward, and I clearly remember we had five or six tanks with us, and I was with I was leading funnily enough at that time, and I was walking by the side of the tank. When we got to Monte Vecchi, we had one tank left, and I'd watched all the others ditch themselves, by one, deliberately.
What do you mean, they deliberately drove into...
Yes, yes. Well, what's the doing there? They had no intention. I don't know what tank they were such, but those tanks all ditched themselves.
How did they do it? What's...
Well, you just suddenly see one of them veer and into a ditch. if that wasn't delivered, I don't know what would be.
Were you under much fire as you moved up towards the village?
Not until they must have taken some, eventually, taken some sort of covered approach in the folds of the hills, I suppose, but as we approached the gates of the Montefiore, it was a walled town. As we approached the gates there, from high up in the wall, a spandau opened up. Well, a spandau, when it fired a burst, it was like a motorcycle revving. You could view it at once, a spandau, and I was by the side of the track of the one tank that was left, and that tank, it stopped so fast its track broke and was lying in front, and it opened up with its machine gun, and I was watching the bullets just hitting the ground about 10 feet in front of it. You know, I don't sound very complimentary towards tanks, do I? But
what type of tank were they?
Sherman's,
but crewed by British?
Perhaps I shouldn't be saying this.
And then, so you were by this tank, and it had...
it was just firing continuously straight into the ground in front of it. And every few moments, or not few months, obviously, it probably takes about, I don't know how many seconds to fire off a hole. They had little cases, and every tank was going, a little flap would open on the side of the tank, and out would come a small case and a hand, and basically close again. And I think it must have fired about three of these little cases of brownies, I think they were, into the ground in front of it. Anyway, my section was lying down by the side of the tank, and I looked back, and I could see our platoon sergeant and the other sergeant all gathered together in the middle. We were under the protection of a tank of some sort. And he came back, and he said, when I blow the whistle, he's pitch famous. Came back and said, pitch famous. When I blow the whistle, everybody over. And that's what happened.
How far were you to go in that last attack?
We were practically... I think we must have been... You see, I think the... because I'm speaking of now from 50-odd years ago, I think the... Mr. Monte Vecchio, I think it was with a raised bank just below the wall. And we were lying under cover there, very close to the wall indeed. And when I got up, the gates were practically maybe 20 feet or 30 feet in front of me. And anyway, he blew the whistle, and everybody got up and charged through the gates.
They were open?
The gates were hanging loose on the... I had been told, but I can't say whether it was true or not, but... I have been told that they had made an attack through a minefield there. Well, I know they did because one of my friends had his footballing up there, going through that minefield. And
this is A Company.
And Bangalore torpedo. I don't know if you know what the Bangalore torpedo is. Actually, it's just a series of mines on a pole, which Hawkins mines they put on it and they run the gates with it. This is what I understood. But we charged through the gates. And of course, there was firing going on all the time. There was, I think, the A Company were carrying out a mopping up process by then. But as I went through the gates, there were perhaps 30 or 40 Germans hurled against the wall directly in front of me. They had foresters prodding them with their bayonets and walloping them with their butts of their rifles. They were quite furious, everyone. And remember one of the corporals, he was dancing.